the Cochrane Show. This is the Cochrane Show. It's not the whole show like you get every day. It's the shorter version in the podcast way. You must remember less time helps you stay. Yeah, this is the Cochrane Show. Yeah, this is the podcast show.
It's the Steve Cochran Everything Podcast, and this is part two of Ross Interviews Me. My son, Ross Cochran, we thought it'd be interesting for him to ask anything he wanted to ask of me. And we covered, you know, a few personal things in the first half. So wherever you want to take it, let's go with the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for coming. Appreciate you coming on to your own podcast.
I appreciate you asking me to be here.
Yeah, no problem. We had to work with your scheduling people, but I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm a very busy guy.
You are. So I want to start just kind of, you know, last time we got a little bit more personal. And this time I want to just kind of get a little bit more biographical, because I think one of the things that happen when you do a show every day is you have to talk about the things that are happening every day.
Sure.
And one of the things that, one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of your show is not only because it keeps me in the will, but also because I know you. I know the people on your show, mm-hmm. and I know the personalities. And I think one of the cool things about the podcast, you had this conversation with Dave, is you got a chance to learn more about Dave and the people who are here.
Longer form without the interruptions.
Without the interruptions. Cough, cough. Mary Vanderbilt, cough, cough. So I want to start with, we talked, coming from upstate New York, but when did, as a millennial, it's hard for me to understand, when did radio become the thing that you were like, oh, this is what I want to do?
I was a jock, not nearly as good an athlete as I thought I was. Like most jocks.
Yeah.
Pretty good at a number of sports, but not really good at any sport, with the exception of golf. I was a pretty good golfer. And so I had, designs on, I was definitely going pro in something. I didn't know what.
Sure.
And then when I realized it wasn't going to happen, there was a guy named Howard Cosell, who millennials won't remember, but Howard Cosell kind of changed the world of sportscasting. You wouldn't be even familiar with ESPN if not for Howard Cosell. He was a blowhard, and he created an entire generation of blowhards, and he was an educated blowhard. So it became clear you just didn't have to be an ex-athlete or an old white guy to be a sports play-by-play guy or a color guy.
Sure.
So I was going to do sports. The problem was ESPN started right around the same time, and since I didn't have the tag of being an ex-professional athlete, the best route for me to get in was to be funny and outrageous, and it was too early.
Yeah.
It was pre-catchphrase ESPN. It was 1980. So instead of that, I got offered a job as a disc jockey at my local radio station at WTKO in Ithaca. It's a station I grew up listening to. And that led to, I actually did sports on that station as well. Did play-by-play, or did color for hockey.
Yeah.
When I was 19. But it was way less sports and disc jockey. So it started out that way.
So when you were, especially because I've heard the color for hockey story, mm-hmm. How did you, because if I wanted to prep for something like that, right? Mm-hmm. If I was working here still and someone was like, hey, go cover Northwestern basketball. I don't know Northwestern basketball the way Dave Venna does. I don't, I am not Adam Hogue. But I would have every possible resource ever imagined to me to be able to prep for that and do a good job.
How do we do it in the old days?
How did you prep to cover hockey? Because I know you like hockey.
Right.
But I know that doing color for hockey was not something that you were, going to grow up to do.
The press kit for Cornell University hockey consisted of the Cornell University media guide, which I believe was put together as a graduate project by a Cornell student who had about 15 minutes on his hand. So that took care of understanding the Cornell team.
Yeah.
The Boston Garden I knew something about because that's where we did the ECACs. And the Boston Garden is where the Celtics also played. It was this old rat trap barn. And the teams that were playing in the ECACs were all East Coast teams. So what you did is you read the paper. Now, the paper, son, was what the internet now calls the paper.
Yeah.
But this was the actual paper. It consists of paper, and it reminds me, I don't know if you'll remember this, when the Chicago Tribune, like all newspapers, was trying to figure out who they would be around 2000, early 2000s, you and your buddies were at the house, and I said, I want to run a little test, and I had the Sunday paper. And I held the Sunday paper out, and I laid it out. And you were all sports guys. And I said, flip through it and tell me, like, one story a piece you guys would want to know more about, you and Justin and Kevin and those guys. You all pick stories. And I said, well, how are you going to find out more? You go, well, we'll read it on the internet.
Yeah.
Go, it's right there. What do you mean you're going to read it on the internet? It's right there. You can read it. But that was the separation.
Uh-huh.
And that's how you knew newspapers were done, because there was no reception in the millennial brain that the newspaper is where you could read what you could access on the internet. And it's still something for old people that's hard to understand. But the prep came from the newspaper until about 2000.
Interesting.
Maybe 2005 even.
Yeah, because I know some people still would use that for prep. Some guys who have been in it for a long time.
Dave Bennett still does the paper every morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think, too, that's one of the most fascinating things about radio to me is, I think you once told me there will always be some guy talking behind a microphone to talk about whatever's going on, and people will always turn to that medium. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think is really interesting growing up as your kid is people really think they know you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Very intimate medium.
It's a very intimate, and they get access to you 4 hours a day in a way that they don't to a Rick Pearson writing a column in the Tribune.
True story. Phone call away.
Right. Exactly. Even, you know, even for a show like yours that does mm-hmm. Mostly texts. So,
yeah, I don't necessarily take the call, but they could make it.
Call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the reverse of me and you. So,
yeah, it really is.
So the, we talked about radio, but what was the weirdest thing you've been asked to do on air?
On
I want to get in more into your career.
A strange thing I've been asked to do on air. I don't know. I mean, the easy thing would be to say the Minnesota State Fair, where my head was carved in a block of cheese.
Yeah.
And then listeners had Ritz crackers and they could eat right. cheese out of my head.
Now, that hasn't happened to everyone?
That hasn't happened to everyone. That was weird. You know, you think weird, sometimes you think really bad appearances you had to do.
Yeah.
I had to do an appearance in Detroit at the Michigan State Fair, which was sponsored by, is Big Red a gum? I don't chew gum, as you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By Big Red Gum. So I thought there'd be a huge Big Red Gum tent and celebrities and things. I got to the Minnesota State or the Michigan State Fairgrounds, and I was seated behind a card table with sticks of Big Red Gum for people to grab
Perfect.
As they walked by. So that was a proud moment.
Yeah.
And you go all the way back to WTKO, the first station, and WNY, and some of those grocery stores and car dealerships were big places you'd go. Sometimes people showed up for you. Sometimes they didn't. But at the grocery store, I was once asked to do stand-up comedy for their Christmas party, which they held in the grocery store. They shut the grocery store down, so all the people that worked there would have the grocery store Christmas party. They didn't have a stage.
Sure. You were next to the melons.
No, I was actually in the customer service place, which is like two steps up above everything.
Oh, perfect.
With the PA mic for the store.
That's hysterical.
Doing comedy. Yeah. It's a little tough to get attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's hard to get a room that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot. I'm sure, you know, some of those memories will come out in therapy, but uh-huh. that's just a handful.
What is, so, you know, your reputation with management is pretty famous
mm-hmm.
As a guy who occasionally
got fired. Yeah.
But I don't want to go into, like, where does that come from in your psyche, because that's what your therapist is for, but... What is the weirdest thing that you've been asked to do by a management that you, I'm going to assume, knowing you, that you said no? Like that somebody was like, oh, you got to have this person on. You got to do
this. Oh, sure. Yeah, 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 a lot. Yeah. And lie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a particular
Nobody
thing.
Here right now, obviously.
Nobody. No. Yeah. Actually, you know, interestingly enough, no.
Yeah.
Because since I came back in 2013, the joke I always do is I got fired in 2010, so I left.
Yeah.
But when I was brought back in 2013, it was by a guy you know well, Jamie DeCastro. One of the smartest guys I've ever met in any business, let alone show business. And not just because he hired me.
Yeah.
But those guys in and around DeCastro that have managed this place, they're fine. I can honestly tell you, and you know this, but in the 6 years I've been back, I don't even think I've had a raised voice incident with management. So that's weird for me.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, it's a unique talent, right? You either have it or you don't.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very clear scorecard on how you get the job and keep the job. You get the job because you have the potential to bring in advertising dollars to pay the bills and more. You keep the job because you deliver on that promise.
Yep.
And if you don't, next.
Yep.
And all the times I've been fired, and not there's only been maybe one or two because of performance. The others were disputes, and the disputes come from the fact that I don't need to be told how to do this. I need to be supported in how I do this. It's my job to get the audience. It's your job as the owner or the management to promote me appropriately to get the audience. That hasn't changed.
Yeah. Do you think, so where do you think, you know, because one of the things that I always is interesting to me is it used to be where, you know, your career path, mm-hmm. you start, you go from a city, a show that 10 people can listen to 100 people can listen to, mm-hmm. to 1,000 people listen to, mm-hmm. all the way to what you're doing right now as one of the premier stations in the country. That pipeline doesn't exist anymore.
Nope.
And I think about people like Pete McMurray, right, who got let go from his station to replace by a couple guys who made a name for themselves on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think radio goes in this digital age? If you could sort of wave a magic wand, how do you get some of those people back that have, you know, a similar pedigree that you do?
Well, the weird deal is you've got an unfortunate collision of things happening because at the exact time you need people to be engaged in the core business of radio, those people are aging out.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience of WGN is 50 plus, mm-hmm. the core audience.
Mm-hmm.
The older side of that audience won't be around forever. Well, there's not a lot
not
of people.
Not you listening. You are going to be around
no,
forever.
No, you're very healthy. Yeah. You look fantastic.
You look great.
But there's very few people under the age of 50 who are listening to AM talk radio. They're brought in by personalities, you know, Bill and Wendy and uh-huh. Roe and whomever. And we have a phenomenal lineup. And I put our lineup up against anybody in the country. But we have to transition all of this digitally in the very near future because streaming is huge.
Yep.
The new house radio, occasionally you hear a very cute voice in the background. That's Abigail Grace, by the way. And she demands attention because she gets attention and she deserves attention. So the Alexa is the new house radio.
Yeah.
You know, there's no radio anymore.
Or Google Home or anything.
Yeah, and the thing is, you literally can't buy a radio. If you go to buy a radio, it's not happening.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
That's a good point.
So the Alexa is the house radio. Streaming through your phone in your car is the car radio. The new cars that are coming out might not even have AM bands on them eventually.
Yeah.
And because of that, it'll be a computer screen. And that computer screen, you'll have to go 5 or 6 deep to find AM. You'll have presets for all the various websites and things you're listening to. So here's where it's upside down. Podcasts have popped up and exploded in the last 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah,
I mean, where they've gone
like,
nuts.
Yeah. I would say probably more like 5 to 10, but yeah.
Well, 5 to 10, you had Mark Maron mm-hmm. and Kimmel's buddy. I can't think of his name. Those guys. In the last 5 years, to be generous.
Yeah.
Everybody has a podcast now. Every dopey comedian talks to his friends.
Kevin Powell of the station giving me a tour when I first came here for the first time said, if you don't have a podcast right now, you're a loser.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Kevin.
And subscribe to Powell at the Park, wherever you get your podcast.
Right. You definitely should. So podcasts now are the new thing in spoken word, in audio. The dumb thing about that is all podcasts are is radio without a transmitter. So since podcast is radio without a transmitter, they're not inventing anything.
Right.
What you do in podcast has existed since 1920.
Right.
So that aggravates me a little bit. Having said that, you're not changing the world. So go with the world
yep.
and do it better. And content rules. And as long as the content that I do or we do is better than somebody else and it's promoted, people will listen to it.
Yeah. And it takes not only quality content that can rise to the top. It takes people who understand how the content is distributed
right.
to make it rise to the top.
Right.
It's interesting. So to get back to you, one of the things that I think is particularly interesting about watching your trajectory is you are a guy who used to call Wake the Enemy. Used to be a bit you do. You'd call, tell everybody what Wake the Enemy was.
Wake Up the Enemy was the FCC eventually said you can't just call people and put them on the air without their permission. Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, you could. And I was on the radio, and I thought, well, you know, it'd be funny, being a big baseball fan. When the other teams come in to play our team, I'll just make a deal with some concierge at a few fine hotels who know where the teams are staying to give me room numbers and aliases. And I'll call, and I'll wake up the enemy. And then I put them on the air without telling them. and I would ask them stupid questions, and I would make them look ridiculous. Maybe the most famous story is Mike Schmidt and the Philadelphia Phillies come into play.
Who's a notoriously really great guy.
Yeah.
Really nice.
He's swell. Yeah. He really is.
Yeah.
He's one of the bigger jerk professional athletes I've ever met, even before the story.
Okay.
So I call him, and he hangs up on me.
Sure.
Well, now I got to call him back.
Of course.
So I call him back, and he says, "Who are you? Don't call this number." Hangs up on me again. I give him 5 minutes because I want him to get back to sleep, and I call him back again.
Naturally.
This went on about five different times.
Yeah.
We never had a long conversation because a lot of it was cursing on his end.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished the show, and I don't think much of it. I had to, fortunately, run out to a meeting. He showed up at the radio station with the team's traveling secretary, the Philadelphia Phillies traveling secretary, to beat me up.
Of course.
Because that's the right move.
I'm glad he brought the secretary to document it properly.
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah. So that was Wake Up the Enemy. Those type of bits were fun to do back in the old days. Some of the rule changes are stupid. The FCC is certainly not my favorite organization. But, they never did anything to me.
Yeah.
They just created rules. I mean, I never got Howard Stern because they didn't do that kind of show.
Right. Because one of the things that I think is interesting about your career is you went from that guy, and part of this is just natural aging, to now you're a guy who is really sort of passionate about the direction the country's going, mm-hmm. the things that really matter. You have become a great promoter for my organization of Let It Be Us that works with kids in foster care, letitbeus.org.
I think as you get older, you realize that in whatever time you have, in a platform you have, if you're lucky enough to have a public platform, especially one as big as this, you need to pay it back. And by paying it back, I mean paying it forward through promoting charitable organizations. And the Tribune Media Company deserves a lot of credit for never telling me not to do that.
Yeah. So, but not every guy who does your show, your type of show, has made that transition. You have a lot of people in radio.
That's why I'm still working.
And that's kind of my question is like, how have you been able to authentically go from Wake the Enemy to talking about the dangers that you see in President Trump?
Grow up. You know, it's you and your sister and being a parent. And you know what this is like. Abigail's here with us today. You got a little boy coming. Being a parent changes you, changes your perspective on the world. It's why Trump makes me so nuts, because I look at Abigail and she deserves a shot to maximize her life in the greatest country on earth the same way you do and the same way I have. And politics has never been more screwed up. So I think it's my duty to speak up on that. To speak up on that, you have to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean college educated. You got to read.
Yeah, you got to be informed.
You got to prepare. Because there's nothing more obnoxious than some chucklehead that gets on the air that hasn't done his homework, who starts spewing lies that are then repeated in the infamous echo chamber we talk about. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's not all Fox News. That happens on the left, too.
For sure.
So know your stuff, tell the truth, and make a change in the world to the best of your ability. And if I fire up people to go out and vote, which I think we have, and fire up people to get more involved, then I'm doing the right thing. And I'm doing it not just because it makes me feel better about the contribution. I'm doing it because it's needed.
Yeah. And I think radio has the potential to really save that. There's not a lot of people like you, but I think unlike social media, unlike websites, radio as a medium, you know, I listened to some podcasts. I brought you to one of those shows by some former Obama guys.
Right.
Right. So the former Obama guys are not exactly going to be objective. Right.
Nope.
But there's something about being able to listen to their very honest feedback as opposed to a website that clearly has an agenda, but tries to act like it doesn't, or a talk show host that tries to act like it doesn't. How do you respond to people who want an escape, who get mad when you talk about it because, you know, they hear about it from every other possible place? I heard Gaffigan talk about this once, where he used to have a Trump joke in his set.
And he dropped it.
And he dropped it because people came to him looking for an hour off.
I think it's a choice, right? It's a choice, and you make that choice, and maybe the numbers would be even bigger. Maybe the advertising dollars would be even better. But I've got to be able to look at myself in the mirror. And to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning is a lot tougher than it used to be. So I got to come in and do a show I want to do. And the show I want to do is a show. You know, it all comes down to one thing. It's Trump. And people think I despise Donald Trump because I'm a Democrat and I'm some crazy liberal. I've been a Republican most of my life. That's the first time I've said that out loud in anything related to this radio station. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. Because what have I said a million times? The far left and the far right are the problems, not the solution. The middle needs to be fired up enough to make a change. Donald Trump is the worst president in my lifetime, and I believe the worst president in American history, because everything he does is about him, for him, and to benefit him. I don't care that the economy is doing well because he's in office. He gets credit for it. He deserves credit for it because he's president. That's it.
Right.
He didn't change the world. He brought some people in and around him that made some economic adjustments, that did some things to stop the overcompensation we did after the 07-08 crisis. That's all well and good. But he hurts this country every day he's in the White House. And you're fully entitled to back him up, but I'm fully entitled to tell you what I think.
Yeah.
And that's what I do every day on the show. I also, for people who have ears and are willing to listen, smack Democrats just as hard when they deserve it. Mike Madigan has effectively helped destroy the core of the state of Illinois and helped drive businesses out of the state of Illinois. He's the last most powerful Democrat state politician in the country.
Yeah, he's the last boss.
Yeah, he really is. And he won't do interviews because he's afraid to answer legitimate questions. He's literally been invited on this show every day for the, I don't know, 1,400 shows I've done since I came back. And the closest we've ever gotten is his guy named Steve Brown. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Played golf with him. But Steve Brown can't get him to do the show. He's a coward. Mike Madigan's a coward. And until he shows up and answers legitimate, fair questions, he's always going to be a coward. And Mike Madigan, pay attention now, is a Democrat.
Right.
Donald Trump is a Republican. I'm against anybody in power who abuses that power to their own benefit at the expense of those who got them elected.
Would you ever run?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. You know, when you kids were little, I thought about it. I don't know that I would. In this circumstance, it's not a cop-out. It's like, well, where can you do most good? I feel like I could do more good to have this microphone for as long as they let me have it or I choose to have it than I could from being one of the 550 in Congress who can't get anything done.
Right.
Because they're all embarrassing, with very few exceptions. You know, I think Senator Durbin is doing his best to do a decent job. And on the Republican side, frankly, there's quite a few that are trying hard to do the right thing. The problem is, and I don't know when this changed, I really don't, but I don't care if you get reelected.
Right.
You weren't elected to be reelected. You were elected to represent. And right now, it's all about getting reelected. And they're saying it out loud. That's the most obnoxious thing. Well, we can't take on this or that. We can't make this move. We can't take on Trump because we need to get reelected. You're not entitled to the frickin' job.
Right.
Your job is to do the job you were elected to do, which is to represent your constituents. Otherwise, get out. So I've never been more interested in term limits because you got to kick people out.
Yeah, absolutely. When you get kicked out of here,
mm-hmm.
whenever you get kicked out of here, yeah. whether you self-kick or otherwise.
I think I'll make it to the end of this deal, which is the end of 2020. Beyond that, it's up for grabs.
Yeah. How do you... What do you think people will say about your show, and what do you want people to say about your show when it's not part of their everyday?
You know, it's interesting to ask. Yes, I'd like people to say he made me laugh and he made me think. That's it. You know,
I think it's a good place to leave it.
Yeah, and that's why I get up in the morning for that. That and the fact to make sure that I'll have time later in the day to nag you about things and see my Abigail Grace and the little guy. Did you tell everybody what Abigail is named her little brother?
I don't know if she'll say it on mic. Hey, Abigail, what do you want to name baby brother?
That's exactly right. Baby brother's name will be...
Yeah, so look for that social posting later this year.
And as I told you, if she knows how to spell it, you have to name it that. Thanks, buddy. If you think of any other questions, you know where to find me.
Yeah, I'm familiar with your work.
This podcast, the Steve Cochran Everything Podcast, because I couldn't think of a better name yet, airs in new form every week, unless I get busy. So you can go to WGNRadio.com. You can go to the WGN Radio app. We got a whole bunch of people we've talked to already, which I hope you can find because our website sucks, and we're trying to figure out a way to make that better.
WGNRadio.com/Cochran.
Yes.
That's where all
does
your
that
content
work?
Is. Yes, it does.
Okay. There was a question about that the other day. All right. So there you go. WGNRadio.com/Cochran. The Everything Podcast. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, the regular show, 6 to 10 a.m. Tell 10 friends. Thanks, buddy.
No problem.
Did you have fun?
I did.
Is the mic still on? This is the off-air outtake stuff.